Podcasting with your host, Tony
Barham Sports.
Tell you something. In my time at Radio Barham Sports, I've been honoured and privileged to interview Olympic athletes, gold medal winners, Rugby World Cup winners, Cricket World Cup winners. Some amazing accomplishments there. But quite frankly, the trio of individuals I'm going to introduce to you now may well have achieved the greatest accomplishments of anybody that I've ever had the opportunity to talk with. It'll all become clear, but right now it's three of an amazing team of five friends who have done some remarkable work representing Pedal for Parks. But for tonight, it's three of the five: Isaac Kenyon, Alex Pirot, and Lucas Heitzman. Gentlemen, welcome to Verum Sports Podcasting. How on earth are you?
Pretty good.
Yeah, brilliant.
Amazing. Thank you.
It's been a week since the expedition.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to ask Isaac, thank you for that. And what an expedition. What an expedition. Look, it's quite a first of all, because lots of people know that famous route, don't they? Loads of great charitable people do it. It's almost the mecca of the charitable world, that Land's End to John O'Groats one. But you guys went, yeah, that's pretty cool, but we're going to do one better. We're going to get in those Isles, those Orkney Isles and the Isle of Sicily. Isaac, kicking it off with you. Representing Pedal for Parks as you have been, whose brainchild was this, and where is that fine line between genius and insanity you work with there, please?
That is funny. Brainchild started off actually. Alex and I were in the pub just discussing the Mecca, as you call it.
Hold on, all the greatest expeditions ever kick off in that kind of setting, right?
I think so. I generally think so. It brings community together, doesn't it? And yeah, we just started off, let's do something, like a challenge together. Yep. I always wanted to do the Land's End John O'Groats cycle, I was thinking about it. And then at the time, I also had a lot of passion and care for the environment.
Yes.
On a previous expedition, I was sitting on an ocean rowing boat for 40 days thinking about what I actually cared about in life. And for me, environment and the climate and I guess the UK green spaces and stuff like that did a lot for my mental health in the past. So I wanted to do a cause. And I wanted to do this cycle, so I connected the two, and then Alex was very keen on it. And then from there, we got, I guess, slightly inspired, and maybe you would start saying maybe we turned insane when we decided to add a little bit extra spice to the mix. One of my friends that I kind of knew for a while back now in ocean rowing, there was a video of him on water bikes down in Monaco.
Sure.
And then some weird thought came to my head where I was like, why didn't we just extend this this Land's End John O'Groats cycle and include islands as well and cycle those and cycle the sea?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. As I say, I respect it massively, and I think it is such a powerful cause. And, you know, I think you guys are absolute legends. But again, slightly insane, but I think that's a good thing. I think it was Seal who said we all need to get a little bit crazy or something like that. Alex, the second member of this team of five, three of you to introduce today. Well, what a legendary achievement. Again, let's frame it, just a week ago now completed. A massive amount of challenges here, obviously, just Land's End to John O'Groats alone. But you factored in this remarkable, perhaps never to be repeated feat of that water bike element. Just give me an idea here, as a landlubber that I am, of just the challenges of that water bike component, please, Alex.
Well, there were a lot of challenges that we had to really plan for beforehand. Mm-hmm. Sporting wise, you know, it's not as hard as like some of the super passes we did on the joggle cycle. Mm-hmm. It kind of feels like you're cycling uphill, but mm-hmm. low gradient, kind of continuously. Mm-hmm. And we did it as a relay, so we had rests, mm-hmm. but it was more the environment we were going in that was mm-hmm. a challenge. So Pennon Firth, one of the most dangerous straits in Europe. Mm-hmm. We had a local guy take us across because there's no way you can really navigate it mm-hmm. otherwise, unless you really know the area, which none of us did. Only Isaac had been to Orkney before. For all of us, it was the first time there. If we hadn't had that pilot boat guiding us, God knows what could have happened. And the Isles of Scilly crossing, that's a different beast. The conditions might not be as hard. There might not be as many whirlpools and currents, but it's a long game. So it's 50 plus kilometers. So the dangers there were more exhaustion, boredom, straying away from each other, which is why we did it as a relay in the end. The initial idea was to do it as a five. But then, after speaking to a few sailors and the guys who took us across to the Isles of Scilly, Glenn and Jack, it was quite apparent that that would never happen. That would be much too complicated and too dangerous. So we had to do it as a relay, which actually worked out really well. And allowed us all to be kind of energetic when we were actually on the bikes and enjoy it a lot more.
Alex, it's awesome to hear that, of course, that these feats of endurance, when you are going into that great unknown, do require immense amounts of planning. But just to give the context here, I believe the odds were massively stacked against you. I think those who know gave you only maybe a 20% chance of pulling this off. So, again, just give me an idea of when people who know are telling you the likelihood of doing this, was there ever a danger of you guys going, let's put a taper on this? Or was it just like, 20% odds, I'll take that?
Well, the taper was a relay in the end. That gave us the confidence we can do this. And, we were prepared to not be silly. And if the weather conditions had been a lot worse, we were blessed on both crossings, actually. Pretty very unlikely to ever have those conditions again on both ends. But we were prepared to, we had a schedule to stick to, and we were prepared to take the ferry across, which would have been quite sad. But we weren't going to risk, ourselves for it. And, overall, the message of the whole expedition wasn't really about the sporting achievement as much. It was a lot more about the documentary and the environment message we're trying to promote. So it was always, in our minds, we had made it very clear to each other, and we'd all decided we're not going to be silly and push ourselves too far. None of us, no one's a water biking expert, I guess, right? they're pretty rare objects to find. So, and they're not boats either. There's not as many safety mechanisms. So it was all pretty calculated risk. Isaac's very good at calculating risk, so we're all very confident.
I mean, when we were cycling across the Orkney to the start of doing that sea crossing, you're just passing either side. There was these four roads that go across sea, connecting the islands. Either side, there was just shipwrecks everywhere.
That's instilling confidence right there. And I can't wait to discuss this, because, of course, this is all available. We're going to see all the sights and all the sounds. And again, it's for this important environmental ethos and documentary build up to that. But I just want to bring in Lucas Heitzman, the third member of this five members in total for this awesome project. Lucas, before we focus in on those key aspects of the environmental matter, tell us all about this great dog. Another astonishing thing that hit me, just looking into this a little bit, was the fact that, setting aside the remarkable element of that unrepeatable feat, the amount of endurance that must have been required, 1,111 miles total. I'm going to repeat that because it blows my mind. 1,111 miles total. And unless I'm mistaken, if you consider the whole route on balance, you're basically ascending 2.5 Everest in terms of an ascent context. Again, just give me an insight of the challenges that this faced and how important, as a team, pulling together that camaraderie was to get you through this.
Yeah, I think, you explained it quite well there. Actually, the 2.5 times Everest is, our legs definitely reminded of that, reminded us of that during the trip. But I think a big part of it, so obviously leading up to the project, we had a lot of admin kind of going on, but and a lot of it was actually then managing the training side of it. Some of us not really having spent a lot of time on road bikes or even just cycling in general before the trip, trying to go from zero or very little cycling energy or skill to then cycling the length of the UK alongside a full-time job, alongside running the project, was probably more challenging actually than the cycle itself.
Honestly, I think Hercules had like seven challenges. I swear to God, he'd be like, no, I'm absolutely, this is one too many. It's amazing.
I think Hercules would have put a shame on this cycle, but it was definitely challenging. And I think it wasn't like day by day. We didn't have extortionate amounts of, you know, we had, I think, no more than 100 miles every day. But then it's the like repeated every day. There's no recovery. You kind of, all right, you've got off the saddle one day and you, it's not like, okay, I'll go to sleep and tomorrow I'll just, you know, have a hot chocolate and like sleep for the rest of the day. It's like, okay, I've got to get up tomorrow again, early morning, and start cycling again. And that was kind of where then the mental side of it started to take a bit more of a toll, was more so than the physical, was just the constant like no rest. And you know, you'd get off your bike, you would have interviews to do, and really interesting interviews, so you're trying to listen to these, what these amazing people are saying, and then at the same time you're also dreading getting on the bike again and all that. There's so much going on and non-stop, like
is it for a little while with bikes? Are you sort of all biked out just for a bit, Lucas?
Yeah, I haven't touched my bike for a while. I don't plan on touching it for a bit, but it is physically very demanding. But then, as I said, it was very much a mental game as well, and trying to stay motivated, and you know, not just stay motivated, but keeping that, you know, your team together. Yeah, exactly. And that was a huge challenge. But we all pulled through, and I think it's fair to say the team did an awesome job of getting to the finish
and live to tell the tale, most crucially. And what a tale.
Well, yeah, exactly. Just about.
Isaac, I want to loop you back in here, because as I say, it's a phenomenal achievement, but there is a bigger picture. This was obviously concocted in a pub, as all the greatest escapades are, but it was for Pedal for Parks. There was an awesome documentary filmed at Eco Doc. When you're going through those challenging moments, was it that bigger picture that kept the motivation flowing? Talk to me about that and give me an idea of how we can get that documentary in our lives.
Yeah, so I mean, if you think about it, going up cycling is quite, you know, it's possible, you can get into it, you can build those muscles up.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of what's going on in the world right now, in the climate crisis, if we call it that way, or the issue that we're doing, is our interference with the natural world.
Yep.
They can't fight like we can fight. The environment can't fight like we can fight. We're winning.
Mm.
We're taking way more than we're giving back. It's obvious who's in control here. Mm. And at the end of the day, what's going to happen is it will bite us back, because there'll be a point where the environment won't be able to give anymore, which means we won't be able to take anymore, which we'll be stuck. Mm. And then we'll actually be fighting ourselves. So one of the notions of the film really is thinking about how can we protect what is protecting us, but we don't know about. So we look at the environment like we're in control of it, but actually it's actually the thing that's in charge here, and we should really treat it with a bit more respect, give back what we take, because at the end of the day, when it's gone, and we're stuck. So that's really what it is. And we had all these interviews with interesting experts, numerous different people who are in the climate change solution space or regenerating projects in conservation, and just looking at what could happen, what could we do at scale to really try and reverse, and then what behavior change is required for us to really get behind this mission, so we're not actually extincting ourselves.
As nobody really should desire, but sometimes you look at our actions and you question that. Alex, bringing you back in here, obviously this bigger picture is so crucial, and obviously in this documentary, this Eco Doc, filming and documenting your intrepid adventures in line with some real expert gurus here, it does sound fascinating. Alex, I'm always going to revert back to a pint for half full kind of a guy, the eternal optimist. Do you think that there is a sea change, that we are becoming more mindful, or do you still think that most people are almost in that horrible head in the sand syndrome? What's your thoughts based on your experiences and the experts' take on this?
I think it's definitely moved a lot in the last 5 years. A decade ago, it was a lot worse. Everyone's attitude was definitely a lot worse. You know, there were people talking about it, but there was still a debate, is climate change a thing or not? We've thankfully moved past that now, accepted it is, you know, a thing, an actual threat. And now it's more like, oh, crap. Like, what do we focus our energy on, right? Because there's not that much time left. So what are the most impactful solutions we need to focus on? That's kind of the stage I feel we're at now. It's where do we invest the money? How do we stop investing, you know, time and money into destructive things, which is still a huge problem? But every single person we met, you know, small projects, big projects, you know, big organizations like Sustrans and then tiny hydro projects, everyone's got the hope. And what we're aiming to achieve is just to, you know, raise awareness of smaller, less well-known solutions, which there's plenty of in the UK, and try and, you know, success for us would be investment in those at least one of those or two of those projects which we discovered.
And by the way,
it is changing, but it's a bit still a bit too slow, in our opinion, and it really needs to just keep picking up. Like the technology is there, the solutions are there. There's so many solutions. There's so many ways that we can, you know, reverse the change and have a positive outcome. But it needs to pick up the pace for sure.
And you guys are literally leading the way in that. I think the key phrase there was raise awareness, because ultimately there is, I think, a sense that we need to do more. There's that desire, that appetite. But if you're not conscious of how you can help, or you can actually actively engage, then once again, that hope almost just becomes quasi-meaningless. So this documentary, I think, is going to be vital. Is it something that we can currently get access to? Is it in post-production? Where and when can we educate ourselves accordingly? Via Alex, that, please.
It's currently in post-production. So because we filmed it all during the expedition. Only been a week, so you know our film guy needs a bit of a rest. It's the guys we work with, Kevin, Gav. They're doing the whole hog. So you know the pre-prod, the filming, and the post-production as well. So we've agreed on 3 months after the expedition.
Perfect.
So end of September, start of October is when you know we were expecting the final article to be released. So we'll have a film premiere, of course. Mm-hmm. Will be the first time it's shown widely. Mm-hmm. And then the holy grail for the film will be to have it shown at COP26.
Yep.
So there's a pretty... So for those who don't know, that's the United Nations Climate Change Conference.
Glasgow this year?
That's it. It's Glasgow, that's hosting it. So it's a big, big moment for the UK, and it's a big time for the UK to showcase, you know, what it can do, because there's so much going on. But mainstream news, the headline is always what's wrong, right? There's actually so much that's right in this country. You know, people should be proud, and it was really interesting to just see how much really is out there. And there's a lot of passionate people, there's a lot of grassroots projects, there's a lot of big projects as well. Mm-hmm. And after that premiere, hopefully COP26, there's some good, we've got a good chance of getting in there. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we'll tour it at film festivals, so adventure and ecological film festivals, and then release it to a streaming site. So, you know, hopefully we get a distributor behind us as well. Hopefully if the festivals do well, it can get picked up there. That'll be ideal. So it reaches, you know, a big audience.
No question about it in my head. This is a vital narrative that you're telling here. Go ahead.
Yeah, Isaac, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say Amazon Prime as well is one that we're looking to put the film onto.
I'm sure. I think you've got great goals. I think it's going to be a very, very important narrative. I'm just looping Lucas back in here. One of those key goals, you've already mentioned it, is the UK's, Glasgow's COP26 to COP26. They've got a kind of key, almost headline-grabbing line, as the world returns to normal. Obviously, this is something we're all going to experience. And obviously, this is something we're going to be kind of more mindful of. Lucas, I like that as a headline, but I mean, I wonder, should we finesse it? And should there be something like that, anything that is no normal is more mindful?
Yes, I think as the world returns to normal, I think we can't. We got to kind of make changes. And as Alex kind of said, there's so many projects out there. New ones, but there's also like old techniques. There's agroforestry, it's called, one of my favorite ones from the trip, kind of mixing farming and forestry kind of into one. So there's so many cool things that have been done for centuries, and it's kind of just educating people now or bringing to light things that are out there, so we can make those changes and that making sure that we're not going back to the ways we used to. I think that's the biggest thing at the moment.
And once again, it comes back to that, to the educational process and that raising awareness goal. Isaac, one of the key, I think, intrinsic values of just quite simply, nowhere near as epic as what you guys have done, but I can't wait to witness this epic tale. But just very simply, just getting out for a walk in our nature, whether that's Hertfordshire, St. Albans, wherever you might be in our beautiful, still green and glorious land. Just give me an idea, please, of your professional understanding of that important relationship between our mental well-being and quite simply an appreciation and engagement with the natural world.
Yeah, and on a professional, I wouldn't say it's solely professional. I haven't studied a PhD in this or anything like that, but on a personal level and sure, through lots of different organizations like Mind, getting outdoors and connecting, being mindful of what's around you. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to do that when you're indoors, stuck indoors, especially during this pandemic. Mm-hmm. But whilst you're outside, you can really start taking in sort of sounds, connecting with people, talking to people, walking mm-hmm. about, and that can really improve mental health. Mm-hmm. And this whole film, although, yes, we're talking about climate solutions, how do we regenerate? Mm-hmm. That's because we want to preserve these spaces because they are really intrinsic and important for our physical and mental well-being. Mm-hmm. More so than people may realize. Mm. You might go for a walk and not actually realize that you're improving your mental and physical well-being. But if you actually think about it, take yourself away from that environment and put yourself indoors, doing a self-isolation two-week lockdown, you really do realize that actually those spaces are incredibly important for us. We are animals, we are mammals. We're just like the birds. We need the outdoor space. We need to run around. And I think it's really important that people take in and get outdoors, even if it's just a little walk, that can make such a difference.
Absolutely.
10, 15 minutes in your day, have a break, just realign your thoughts, get rid of all these, notifications and advertisements that we bombard ourselves with through technology, and just have that sort of space to yourself to think about. And that's where even I got this idea from.
Yeah.
And get a lot of motivation and purpose out of it, actually.
And one thing, again, that's key, I'm really excited, as I say, to get this documentary into my world. But you did great work here in support of an organisation which obviously has that philosophy absolutely embedded in their core. Alex, just give me an idea, if you could, into the important relationship you've built and the great work you've done to support National Park UK Foundation.
Well, yeah, we've got a great relationship with National Parks UK, because when we first started the project, we thought, well, we need to work with a charity, to support the people who are doing the great work. And we thought, okay, so what kind of charity? There's so many out there, mental health, nature protection. So we thought, what really means a lot to us? And then because we live kind of all over the country, what has a far-reaching impact? What, affects all of our lives? We saw national parks. National parks are brilliant. We all love to spend time there. All of us have our favourite national parks. And then Parks UK was actually founded only a few months before we started Pedal for Parks. So it seemed like a perfect match. So basically, the gist of what they do is bring the 50 national parks in the UK. Mm-hmm. And before, a couple of years ago, before the National Parks UK charity was founded, they all operated pretty independently. Mm-hmm. So the whole purpose of National Parks UK is to bring a lot more collaboration between mm-hmm. parks, mm-hmm. so they can share best practices, work on similar projects, and especially improve their communication. Some of them have a lot less resources than other parks, so it's kind of to level up the playing field as well, mm-hmm. and really just to be stronger as one unit. So because they started, very recently, we've actually been working, talking with them since the start of our project, and they've been great. They're really open. They've been behind us the whole way, and we've been behind them. And through them, we got to meet, several rangers doing our trip in various national parks. So it was brilliant to have access, directly to the people on the ground. They've helped us with our communications. They're a great source of knowledge, very knowledgeable people. They know anything you could ever want to know about national parks, and they have a big platform as well, so we can reach a lot more people. And it's that we're doing it for the parks, and not just for the parks, for green space in general. Mm-hmm. But they were just a perfect match for us, and they're just great people to, they're all passionate. It's not really the kind of job you do if you don't care about nature, right? Mm. So you know, we always have a good time talking. It's not always necessarily serious or whatever, but just talking about how much we love nature, gushing about that. It's been really, really good.
But what I really value massively about that, in any endeavor, you need to find that synergy and that partnership connection, don't you? Because, you know, then, as you say, it's about pooling resources. You can bang a drum, but when you get an orchestra together, metaphorically speaking, you're in a much stronger place. Isaac, got a feeling you were looking to contribute just then. Feel free, sir.
Yeah, whereas we're, you know, connecting people to the cause and people to think about maybe a behaviour change, the National Parks UK are actually doing work, conservation work. They're actually the ones hands-on.
Gotcha.
They've got volunteers. They're doing so. We of course can't do that, but working with them, we can support and drive people to get involved with them and actually make physical change as well. And they're doing scalable effort.
Perfect.
Which is something that we're really keen on.
And once again, it is that uniting of different skill sets to a crucial common cause here. Lucas, I know as well as this great documentary, you guys were busy, like you say, being interviewed all the time. Mind the Green Space podcast. Tell me a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, so Mind the Green Space podcast was started quite some time ago now. And basically the aim to lead and physically and emotionally. There's loads of cool people on there. And one of our support crew, Alicia, she runs it. And I think Isaac makes an appearance on there as well every now and then. It's a really, really, really nice little podcast.
And I guess available in most places we can find our podcasts. So yeah, check out Mind the Green Space. Brilliant stuff.
Spotify.
Yeah, iTunes as well. Yeah.
Perfect. Isaac, just coming back to you as we kind of wrap things up now. Again, awesome to learn everything about this phenomenal expedition. And again, I absolutely salute you all. Want to remind everybody that, again, this was in aid of National Park UK Foundation. The team here cycled over 1,111 miles, inclusive of Land's End to John O'Groats. And, oh, yeah, we're going to throw in Orkney Isles to the Isles of Scilly to boot here. And, again, all in support of that National Park UK Foundation, of course, naturally raising great values and awareness as they go. Tell me, though, I know Pedalfoot Park is the project. Can we still get involved? Can we still offer you some kind of support, sponsorship, et cetera, et cetera? How can we achieve that?
Yes, you can do. And you can go onto our website. We have a film trailer that you can watch to kind of get a visual impact of what we're doing. Also on our website is a link to our GoFundMe page, which supports the charity and is a sponsor if you wanted to give some money. And then other ways you can support us is get us in touch with interesting projects that you know of, regenerative or climate solutions that are going on in the UK, whether it's grassroots or massive scale projects. And we'd be pleased to add that into our podcast or even just discuss with them. We're looking to carry on this brand, not just beyond Pedalfoot Parks and actually to take it to another level. So keep in touch, follow us on social media.
Get in touch with us. We love to hear about what's going on.
Do you know what? I love your energy, guys, and I think you are absolute champions. Alex, in closing, remind me again of the way that we can engage with Pedalfoot Parks and beyond. And is there anything in closing you would like to add or just crystallize for me tonight?
For anyone interested in following us and following our journey as it continues, because this is basically just the start for all of us, pedalfoodparks.co.uk, that's the number 4 in the middle there. And we're, of course, on all the major social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. And then, of course, the GoFundMe is live and will continue to be live. You know, there's always more money we can raise for National Parks UK. The film will be coming out, so that's the next big major thing that should be on everyone's radar. And then in closing, we just want to thank everyone who supported us as well. We had an awesome support crew during the expedition. A lot of people have helped us before. We've got a whole host of brilliant sponsors as well and endorsers. Thank you very much to them. And thank you very much to you, Tony, for having us on here as well and in spreading the message, because that's really what it's all about, is driving behaviour change and just giving people hope and making a positive impact to nature and to the environment around us.
honestly, I really admire what you guys are all about as an individual, as a collective, and quite frankly, as beacons of what we had ought to be capable of doing as humans. Lucas, final thing to you, just any of the final thoughts or anything else you'd like to just reaffirm at all?
It's been a pleasure being on the podcast. Finally, just get outside. Even if it's just a small little walk, get outside, get some fresh air, clear your thoughts, and then when you get back in, whack us a follow on Instagram and stay posted with what's going on.
Absolutely, keep involved with these guys, because I tell you what, they are doing a remarkable thing, and we can all learn a little something from them. Again, fine line between genius and insanity, guys. I totally maintain that, but I think you veer on the genius side, and I salute you all, and I want to wish you every continued joy, success, and happiness, and thank you for spending a bit of time with me tonight. Thank you again.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Thank you, Tony.
Yes, Tony. Thank you.